All right, good morning. I'm going to call of the Executive Committee of the Board of Directors of the Air District, and it is Thursday, September 5th. Marcy, could you do a roll call, please?
On the roll for the Executive Committee meeting of September 5th, 2019, Director Barrett, Director Chavez, Director Joya, Director Groom, Director Haggerty, Director Hudson, Director Ju, Director Sparing, Director Wagenknecht, Committee Vice Chair Sinks,
here.
Committee Chair Rice.
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right, thank you, and we'll do pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So, Marcy, do we have any public comment cards this morning for non-agenda matters?
I have one from Jack Fleck.
Okay, great. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, board members. I'm Jack Fleck. I'm a co-founder of 350 Bay Area and also active with the Climate Emergency Mobilization Task Force. And I'm here with two requests. One is that we were very happy when the Air District adopted a goal of 80% reduction of greenhouse gases by 2050 a few years ago. But science is moving a lot faster. The climate is moving a lot faster. We really don't have that luxury to take that kind of time. The state has a goal of 100% reduction by 2045. And even that may not be as aggressive to reach the goal of the UN's 1.5 degrees. So we urge you to join the 11 cities in the Bay Area who have declared climate emergencies and who are escalating their efforts to expedite the achievement of these greenhouse gas reduction goals. Which brings me to the second point I want to make, which is I recently learned in talking to sustainability officers in some of the cities that one of the major tasks that they're carrying out is doing an inventory of greenhouse gas reductions or greenhouse gas emissions. So yeah. The question I have for you is, why shouldn't the Air District take this on? Why? We need our city, I'm from Oakland, we need our city to get very involved in working with things like the building inspectors installing new heat pumps and electrification of buildings or installing charging stations in garages. There's so much implementation of these plans. For them to be spending a lot of their time doing these inventories is not a good use of our city's resources. And at the same time, it would be great for the Air District because you do have this greenhouse gas fee that you charge, which is a totally appropriate thing. To fund the effort. So I do urge you to put this in your budget, ask the staff to do it. Now, I understand that there are slight technical things about one city might have a different technique and another, so there'll be some issues that need to be worked out. But we think that the Air District can come up with an overall appropriate and compromise plan. The inventory is important. We need to know how much greenhouse gases we're reducing. So that's an important task, but we think that the Air District can come up with a plan to do that. So we urge you to put that in your budget, and as well as declaring a climate emergency, take on this specific task. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So with that, we're going to move on to item number 3, which is approval of the minutes of March 20th. Do I have a motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, one abstention. Director Ju. Item number 4 is the Hearing Board Quarterly Reports. Jack, who's going
to
take
this? I will actually speak to that. So I could not arrange for any of the Hearing Board members to be present to present this item. However, District Counsel Brian Bunger is on hand to answer any questions about dockets, should the committee members have any.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Bunger? Seeing none. So let's see, do we need an action on that, Marcy?
Nope.
Okay, all right. So are there any public comment on the Hearing Board quarterly reports? Seeing none, we'll move on to the Bay Area Regional Collaborative update. And Allison, are you here? Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me here, Chair Rice and directors. I'm excited to share. It's been a little while, and excited to share. I'm going to give a preview. We have a BART Governing Board meeting on September 20th, and have been working on a new two-year work plan for BARC for 2020 through 2022. Just earlier this week, the executive directors and deputy directors of the member agencies met to go through this and some other discussion points that we're working through together. This gives you a preview of the main projects that we're moving forward on together with the agencies that BARC will be supporting and facilitating over the coming couple years. And today I'm going to focus in on the carbon-free Bay Area, the projects that we're specifically working on closely with the Air District. And again, this is a preview. We're finalizing the final draft, and a full memo will go out to the governing board. So we're looking at two areas of work with staff at the Air District, also with MTC and ABAG staff on the AB 617. So much of Air District staff has put in so much amazing time and energy on the work in West Oakland and in Richmond and moving into work in other places. And we think there's an opportunity to really focus in on the implementation of actions that come out of, and specifically in West Oakland, and that will emerge in other places around mobile sources. So how do we really work with the Air District, MTC staff in particular, with community members and other critical stakeholders like the county transportation agencies and others to really move some important strategies forward in our most impacted communities around mobility? In the report, we really are looking at a couple interesting things. This is a new effort on our part in developing our work plan. We're looking at data and where the trend lines are as a state and as a region, and how we're doing in meeting some of our critical issues we face. So around GHG emissions, I think we know that we're actually doing very well. A recent report came out that we're doing well in meeting our goal 2020 goals through the building sector and around energy, but we're seeing the transportation trend lines going in the direction we don't want it to go. It's getting better, but we're still seeing GHG emissions increasing through transportation. So it's an important role for all of us to really think through how we can change that trend line through the work that we're doing, and as much as possible work together across agencies to really help meet those goals. So that is tying both data points, but also tying our work plan back to what the big regional plans that each of the agencies produce. So with the Air District, you have your clean air plan and climate protection strategy. So we want to make sure that the projects that BARC is helping to move forward with the agencies is also tying back to the goals that you've outlined in your big regional plans. For MTC ABAG, it's Plan Bay Area, and for BCDC, it's the Bay Plan. So just to show, we're seeing the 6% increase in transportation emissions, and we really want to change between 2013 and 2017, we really want to change that trend line. So this breaks down how that might look. We're still working out the details with staff. This is and we want to focus in potentially on 3 to 5 strategies, maybe start in West Oakland to help move meet some of those goals laid out by the community, working with local partners there, and support that cross-agency staff and local stakeholders in implementing those strategies and then helping to meet them. And this shows you how these tie in, this project that BARC is helping to support ties back into both Plan Bay Area 2040 and the Clean Air Plan. Recently, we had Berkeley pass a natural gas ban, which is the first of its kind. Berkeley, again, moving the bar in terms of putting forward aggressive policies to help us meet our climate goals. This is one example, and it's a good example of how, as regional agencies, we could take best practices that are emerging in our jurisdictions and help scale them up across the Bay Area and other jurisdictions as appropriate. So the next area of work we're going to be looking at is building electrification, which your climate program out of Air District has been very focused on. And this is an area where we'll build off the model solar ordinance work that we did with the Air District and Bay Wren a couple years ago, is really taking that similar model and how do we take some best practices that are emerging out of your jurisdictions and scale them up and help jurisdictions deliver these and implement these at the scale and with speed necessary to help meet our climate goals. And again, an example of how this ties back into some of the big regional planning goals that are delivered by your agencies. So I'm going to stop there. I don't want to give away all the goods before our BARC Governing Board meeting on September 20th, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Director Hudson.
Yeah, maybe I'm looking at this a little bit different. First, the highlight on page 2 is California's largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions, and you've highlighted a 6% increase in transportation. I can at least look at it and say, well, it's actually a reduction from when we started with going after or attacking reduction of greenhouse gases. Is the Bay Area's graph going to look like this too? Are we increasing 6%? That would be the first question. But the one that looks more important to me and maybe more concerning is the high global warming potential. I mean, it's done nothing but climb, and I don't see it leveling off or anything, and I'd ask, what is this and why? I know when the first time I looked at the scoping plan, I go, what the heck is this?
Well, if I can, I'll start. Director Hudson, on the transportation side, this is something that's going on statewide, if not across the entire country. Transportation emissions are becoming, are going up, and they're becoming a larger part of the overall pie with regard to the relative contributions of sources, and that's, you know, that's something we're going to have to continue to double down and try to address that. On the high global warming potential, we're talking about short-term climate pollutants, and we have some methane rules coming for your consideration the end of this year and also next year as well. So I think we're doing our part relative to at least methane, which is a big part of that picture there.
Is it something else? I mean, I'm trying to separate the six greenhouse gases in AB 32, and is the high global warming potential outside of those, or is it among those six, the sulfur, hexafluoride, that stuff?
It's among the six,
okay.
And the climate staff is working on another strategy. We have a methane strategy we've already completed, and we're implementing that now. Climate staff is also working on a CO2 strategy to lay out kind of where all the CO2 sources are, what tools we have in our toolbox to address those, and they're working on another strategy for these refrigerants, which make up, after methane, kind of the balance of that high GWP number there. So coming up at the next climate committee, we're going to be providing an update on that, on the that new strategy for these refrigerants.
Director Barrett.
That was my question.
Okay. Director Sinks.
I had the same question, and I'm still not quite clear. I mean, every one of these other things is a category I can understand. GWP sounds like maybe it's a catch-all. But it's not the recycling and waste line. It's not the methane from that, right? It's.
I'd have to go back and look at the source inventory and see, you know, how much of the methane is included in the recycling and waste and how much is in the high GWP. But typically, because of the very high global warming potential of refrigerants, those and methane tend to make up most of that high GWP. But the issue of how much of that is counted under the red line, the high GWP line, and how much is counted under recycling and waste, we'd have to go back to that inventory and kind of
see. So some of the methane from recycling and waste could be in the high GWP line?
Potentially.
Or leakage from the distribution system, the natural gas distribution system?
Right. The biggest source of methane in the Bay Area is from the decomposition of organic matter.
Yeah.
But leakage from the natural gas distribution system is also a significant source.
I think it'd be important to understand that and specifically what the GWP comprises.
Okay.
And yeah, the transfer, but you know, in just in terms of absolute numbers, the transportation line is striking and certainly worthy of all of our focus as we seek to get more more efficient about how we move people around. I mean, we have now a robust economy in the Bay Area. Traffic has gotten worse. I attended the session at Lyft yesterday where Air District staff was talking to people in the business, the fleets that they are now available for rental by Lyft drivers and others. And it just seems like we need to figure out how to get more transit and more EVs on the road as opposed to gas vehicles. We talk a lot about supply here, and people come tell us about how we have to fix the supply side, and it just seems like we got to fix the demand side, right? Every car that gets sold here gets a tank of gas every time it needs to be refilled, and it's going to get refilled from gas refined someplace. And the question is, how do we stem that demand and convert it into something that takes less? The other comment I would make is, I know a lot of community choice energy agencies are now working in their local areas on their cities adopting REACH codes for buildings, and I think that would be sharing information about what's going on would be an important point of focus for BARC as well as it explores the building electrification topic.
Absolutely.
That's going to make a big difference. The steps that Berkeley and Menlo Park and others will take this year, I think, will be big. Thank you.
Director Sparing, you're good? Okay. Director Wagner Connect, sorry, I didn't see you down there.
Just to get back to the BARC presentation, I appreciated the pulling together the different plans that we have going throughout the Bay Area with the MTC and the Air District and BCDC and ABAG and all their pulling their plans and bringing that to us so that we can kind of put those together in one coherent, you know, that they're not going off separate directions. They're really trying to attack the same things, and that's good for us to know, and it's good for you to point out here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. Marcia, do we have any speakers on this?
Jed Holtzman.
All right. Jed.
Thank you, Chair Rice and directors. Jed Holtzman, and thanks to Allison for the work and the presentation. This collaboration, I guess, BARC and the agencies working together is really key. And I think we're going to be getting more involved in that going forward. And ultimately, you know, ideally one agency would regulate and control and plan emissions for the region. The sectioning of sources in this way, I think, is probably not in the best interest of emission reductions or public health protection. And the system that we have now, the way that you all are going to work together in the regional agencies is probably through BARC and through this committee's engagement with it. As we've talked to your staff about kind of comprehensively looking at particulate matter pollution, comprehensively looking at combustion sources in the region, combustion of fossil fuels, which causes, you know, a lot of PM pollution as well as a lot of GHG pollution that we're looking at graphs of, you know, a lot of that is going to come, a lot of those reductions are going to come from mobile sources. And so we have a great working relationship with your staff and with you all. And one thing that we're kind of starting to say, and which I guess I would deliver here, is, you know, MTC and transportation planning at CARB and, you know, land use agencies in your regions need to reach the level of ambition and commitment that the Air District has, or else we're definitely hosed. So you guys are kind of way ahead, and you need to pull everyone, you know, we're still exhorting you to do more, which we need to do, and I think that's clear on a national and international level. But regionally, when I go to events around transportation planning for the region, the conversation is way behind what's going on here in terms of GHG emission reductions and in terms of even the vision and ambition for what they're planning for. So I would just urge you all in your kind of personal professional spheres, insofar as you have a relationship to MTC commissioners, insofar as you have a relationship to CAR board members, to kind of help to deliver the good word. And then I would say in the institutional capacity that you are working together for MTC and with MTC and BARC, that I really would urge you to kind of lay down the law and just kind of say it needs to be this way, because we can't have transportation being this huge piece that you don't have any control over, also being kind of the constant laggard and the thing that kind of devolves to each individual consumer's personal choices, which is much, much harder to address. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, I'm bring it back here. I just have one comment. Building off of actually Jed's comments as well, I do think that the role BARC can play is really is important in terms of trying and tying these three agencies together around these priority type of projects, and on the climate front, certainly that's one for us to be working together on. I do have a concern about, I think transportation is the main tranche, and also the methane tranche, frankly. The building electrification and the coming off of natural gas, though extremely important, given way easier with new construction to get to building electrification. And so I just, I would be curious as to what you think is attainable in terms of realistic goals and moving the needle with regards to transitioning our built environment from natural gas to electric.
Well, I think that's, we need to come up with some clear measures on how, you know, what's achievable and in what time frame. I think we do know that new construction, similarly with the solar ordinance that passed on new construction, that is the easiest nut to crack in terms of this, but, you know, from an equity perspective as well. And I think it was clear with, you know, when you look at West Oakland and the impacts that residents in West Oakland experience from air quality issues, a lot could be done to make their houses cleaner and closed off from some of the, you know, better protections and ventilations to protect residents in that neighborhood as well. So I think there's a lot we want to focus on, especially from an equity perspective, on looking at the existing buildings and how we can help people shift from natural gas or gas to electric. And I think there's a lot in there that we need to unpack and figure out how we can have the best impact on that.
Yeah. And I don't disagree, totally important. I just want to make sure in terms of driving down our, right, our GHG emissions that we recognize how much impact that may or may not have. Not that we don't do the work.
Yeah.
All right. Any other comments here? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Allison. Oh, I see you, Dave. Sorry.
Yeah, I really want to compliment how you handle the collaborative. We'll start calling it Bay Area. This is an opportunity for all the groups, all the different organizations, ABAG, MTC, the Air District, BCDC, to kind of put their cards on the table and people realize what the other person is looking at. I'm hearing this and I see this 6% increase in transportation. We're going, well, we got to get away from gas, got to get away from cars. SB 375 is pretty clear. It's three spokes, reduce the greenhouse gas, you know, increase miles per gallon. But the main thrust and the only thing we can look at as a land use planners is reducing vehicle miles traveled by the smart growth principles. And we didn't even mention that today. So I think that it's very important when we have these collaborative meetings that anytime you have an opportunity to share a success story, because replication's a lot easier than invention, this is the opportunity to do it. I really don't want to miss a BARC meeting, especially since one of the projects is mine now. But the reality here is this is where we need to start spending our bucks, to show success. And to me, this is the future over the next decade.
Thank you. Excited to work on this with y'all. Thanks. Right.
Thank you, Allison. Okay. Well, thank you. We will move on to our next item because we don't need any action on that. Right, Marcy? You're keeping me on the straight and narrow. Okay, so we're on to item number 6, which is an update for the production system office, and this is that riveting subject matter that...
It's riveting.
It is riveting. We anticipate this all year long.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the Executive Committee, Blair Adams will give you an update on our Myer Online efforts, and please make it riveting if you can, Blair. That'd be great.
I'll do my best. Good morning, Chair Rice and members of the Executive Committee. We're here today to provide a status update on the Production System Office. Am I not on? Not close enough. All right, let's do this. Someone taller than me before. There we go. Let's begin with an overview of our accomplishments for the first half of 2019 and our goals for the remainder of the year. So we were able to complete draft renewals for all our refinery facilities and expect to be able to complete the 12 largest facility renewals on schedule. We put that one first because it's maybe a small bullet, but it was a gigantic effort. So I'm very happy to say that we're in good position for that. We upgraded our payment gateway earlier this year. And so all of our currently online facilities are running under that new gateway. If you recall, it includes the e-checks and as well as the most common credit cards. And we expect to have all of our facilities on that payment system by the end of the year. We were able to get all our 1215 renewal fee calculations in place. For the remainder of the year, we'll be focusing on incorporating the logic to get all of our renewal fees completed. We were able to implement improved air quality data visualization on our website, and we've improved our and we expect to improve our online mapping later this year. So we're putting a little bit of a push on data visualization onto the website. Also on the website, we launched our stipulated abatement order tracking system for small boilers, and that was in collaboration with enforcement and our legal team. So thanks to those folks for helping us out with it. Finally, we're going to be conducting a request for qualifications to revet all of our professional services vendors and evaluate potential alternatives. Expect to have that wrapped up towards the end of the year as well. Just moving on, a reminder that we've made a kind of a conceptual shift in how we're approaching this major project. We've shifted towards a feature migration approach. In previous years, we'd focused on a bottoms-up strategy of facility migration, which you can just think of as going one facility at a time through all of our 10,000 facilities. By contrast, this feature migration applies functionality across all the facilities. And this top-down approach intends to streamline our customer experience so that we've got kind of this invoice to payment to permit all online for every facility. I'm just going to pause here for a moment because I always like to acknowledge all the team members that make this possible. There is a huge invisible team behind me that just works on long weekends even to get this done. And I'm going to take a minute to introduce a non-invisible one, our product manager, Joy Chen. Probably could have phrased that differently, but anyway, take it away, Joy.
All right, thank you. All right, so this is an example of a draft invoice and a draft permit from the 12 facilities we spoke about earlier. With our previous dry runs that we've done up to this point, we're well positioned to issue renewal invoices in October. We're extremely fortunate to have the highest level of expertise and collaboration with the engineering division, and I wanted to give a special thanks to Kevin Wee, Simon Margolis, Eric Chan, Ariana Hussein, Tu Bui, Mark Gage, and the refinery engineers. Without their hard work and dedication, this progress would not have been possible, and thanks as well to the executive leadership team. Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. Again, just an amazing amount of work done in the last 6 months by these folks. led in the capable hands of Joy Chen. Thank you. So moving on to slide 4. Getting back in front of the mic. So given the shift to feature migration, we've begun tracking our progress in dollars rather than in facilities. This pie chart represents the roughly $35 million of permit renewal revenue. The orange slice represents roughly $7 million of our online facilities. The blue slice, this big chunk that we're talking about, is about $18 million, and that represents the 12 refinery facilities that we'll be renewing in October. The gray slice represents the 10 million facilities that we'll be tackling in early 2020. So that's renewal revenue. Moving on, you've seen this slide many times before, but it's just a reminder of the features that we currently have in production use. Highlighted in yellow are the areas of active development. As I've already mentioned, we'll be extending the electronic gateway to include all facilities by year end. We also expect to be able to generate all of our invoices and permits through the production system this year. Was that riveting enough? No, I got some more for you. Hopefully. Yeah, here's the big one.
and Blair, actually, this is so important, and this is the work of the Air District, and it's not about the revenue is a poor characterization, because the revenue we're talking about actually represents the hours and the resources and the time that's put in to making sure that those folks who are emitting are properly regulated and staying compliant. So it's actually the most important work. So I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I just wanted to make up for being disparaging at the top.
Thank you. No, it's fine. So what I have on the screen here is, I'm doing it before and after here, in case you're wondering, if you haven't read ahead already. This is a screenshot of our current air pollution data interface. And this is the after, so hopefully it speaks for itself, but I will say that we continue to offer raw data downloads, and we've acted as interactive graphing feature, but we continue to offer the traditional tabular views for those that are used to looking at it in a table. Just another example of this interface. As you recall, during the Camp Fire tragedy of late 2018, our website increased order of magnitude greater daily visitors. And so based on the analytics that we were able to generate during that period of time, we determined that there's obviously a huge amount of interest in this data, particularly during fire events. And so we focused these upgrades that you see here on the resiliency to heavy traffic, as well as creating large interface buttons, because a lot of people are accessing this information via mobile devices these days, and so we wanted to make it easy to just kind of one-touch your way into the common views that we saw people accessing during the fire.
Blair, if you can just mention, how many visitors did we get during that time period? Because I know it was...
I think a peak day for us was around 500,000. It was a huge amount of work keeping everything, keeping all the lights on, as we say. But we didn't see any downtime at all. And,
right.
We sure
where a lot of other websites I know went down, including Air Now went down, which is the national website.
Yeah, there was some cocktail party chatter during that period of time where somebody asked me what I did for a living, and I said, well, I manage this data, and they said, your site's down, and I pulled up my phone. I said, not my site. I mean, I will say that it was a challenge keeping everything working. It didn't happen by magic. So just moving on to the schedule now. Back to the dry stuff. We've completed our new payment gateway for our online facilities in the first quarter. I think I mentioned that already. For 2019, we plan to have our refineries ready for renewal. Early 2021, we expect to have all the application features complete. By 2022, we expect to have all of our facilities running in the production system. And then finally, 2023 is getting all of our enforcement and compliance features done. So that really represents kind of where I expect to be able to have all the old systems turned down. And this is a frequent question as well. So talking a little bit about our budget, this slide shows the budget and associated scope projections. You can see that background filled in line graph that shows our budget, and then the bar showing the scope as represented in the number of features that we're producing under that budget. So this year, 2020, is really the peak of our effort. By 2021, we're expecting to see the bulk of the heavy lifting behind us, and our expectation is we'll be able to gradually taper off our funding by continuing to grow our in-house resources. And then by 2025, we should be primarily focused on operations and maintenance. So with that, I thank you for your time this morning, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to address them.
Director Sparing.
Jack, on slide four, what is the percentage of air pollution at each one of these sectors? You know, like the refineries, online facilities, and remainder that contribute to the air quality?
I'll stump her right out of the gate. I don't think I could give it to you in straight numbers, but certainly that those 12 facilities are a large amount of it.
The which?
The 12 facilities represented in that 52%. Those would be all our Title V facilities, the refineries. So Jack, you may be able to answer this.
Yeah, Director Sparing, I think if you take a look at the emissions inventory for stationary sources, these 12 facilities represent easily three quarters, if not more, in terms of emissions. Now, again, just looking at stationary sources, but if you take a look at the whole amount of emissions, you know, mobile, everything, that relative percentage of those facilities do shrink considerably, right? Because so much of our air pollution in the Bay Area is due to, frankly, mobile sources.
Right.
Since we've been able to control these sources, you know, significantly through our regulatory program, 80, 90% kind of control levels. So we can get that for you, Director Sparing. It's, I think, important, really what I think this chart's trying to show you is, and if you take a step back, beyond our salaries and benefits that are provided to the employees, this is where we spend our money in the district. We're spending our money to be able to, frankly, migrate over to an online environment for our permitting and our enforcement activities. And like a lot of things we do, we're leading the country in this effort. We're real proud of the work that we're doing here. And what Blair's kind of laid out for you is the fact that, you know, we're expecting to kind of see a lot of this come to fruition over the next few years. And this has been an effort for a number of you on the board. I know this because you've lived through this effort, but it's taken at least, I want to say, 15, 17, 18 years. Yeah, maybe longer, 20 years to make this happen. But, you know, and it's happened as a result of just concentrated effort over time with a really phenomenal team led by Blair and the folks that he introduced. So,
it just seems like the mobile sources, which are some of the biggest polluters, pay the least.
Yeah, if we could,
you know, to our efforts,
be nice to
what we do. And so,
yeah.
And it, you know, it seems like at some point, you know, one of the speakers talks about you need to coordinate better with them. MTC can't regulate that. I mean,
right.
That's CARB, and I mean, it's
right.
Way beyond their responsibility or capability. And, you know.
Turn it back on.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have anything else to say, so thank you.
Turn it off. Thank you for that.
Director Wagner, connect.
I realize that the production system is huge, and the renewal of permits and the permit stuff is the biggest piece of it. But tell me about the interaction with the public and how the public can get into the sites and then ask questions or make comments that I actually land on somebody's desk to be dealt with.
Sure, yeah, most of the interaction with the general public with regard to permitting is handled through our engineering division. So if anybody is calling in, I think of our engineers as the data custodians. They're the ones that can collect all this data. They're most familiar with each of the facilities. So as far as direct interactions with me, there's pretty much none. It's usually by proxy. In addition to that, we, as you're seeing on the website, we're making more and more data available just directly off the website. One of the things that we'll be seeing later this year is the ability to pull up a refinery permit straight off of our map. So the the other way that we make it available is just, you know, straight up website access. People don't have to phone at all.
Yeah, that's my point. That's, tell me about how available is that? How are we making improvements in that interaction?
Does anybody want
to? I see. Director Wagenknecht, are you referring to making the data available to the public? Is that where you're going? No, absolutely. I think that's a lot of what you're seeing here is the mechanism by which we'll make ourselves more efficient in what we do, right? So
I understand
the applicant will be able to put information online. We'll be able to process it through algorithms built into the system and allow us then to, you know, develop and print the permit. But then there's the whole side to, if the public wants to know, what are the emissions from the refineries over the last 10 years? That's what we're continuing to work on, frankly. That's going to require a lot more effort on our part. You've heard some folks from the public recently raise concerns about, you know, you need to be more transparent. We've heard those kinds of questions and concerns, and we're looking to ways in which we might be able to change our processes internally to make that data a lot more readily available to people. I mean, the ideal, I think, would be is you go on a map and you click and you can then drill down and see all the relevant data. But to get there, it's a lot of effort, and I've got to divert resources to do that as opposed to continuing to make our processes more efficient. And so it's a balancing act we're kind of going through these days because of the concerns you've heard.
I just don't want it to be so totally lost, you know.
Agreed.
That we're putting it all the effort into the production system and we're not bringing the public along with us.
Agreed. And we're concerned about that too, Director Wagenknecht. I don't want to make that happen because, you know, we serve the public, right, in addition to variety and communities and everybody else. And so I think what we're going to need to do is probably change some processes internally, because there's also the side that we have to be mindful of is the fact that what happens is a lot of companies provide us information that is protected information, right? And they label it as such.
Sure.
And it slows us down considerably to be able to mine, you know, go through that information, make sure that it's not out
redact
there in the public, right? You got to redact all that stuff. And we have to make sure that it is indeed business confidential. That's something that we don't want people hiding behind if it's important information for the public. So I think you'll hear the results of that work here in about 6 months. We're planning to bring that to the board. Kind of some additional steps to provide the more transparent set of information to the public that you've been hearing about.
Are we able to, one of the issues that keeps being brought to my attention is that to ask a question, you feel like you just put it out in the ether and there's no real direct response coming to that question, and are we able to interact that way? Are we getting to that?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so we have people can ask us questions about complaints online. The if you want to get a hold of our enforcement staff, that's all online. We have a lot of information, I think, that's dispersed throughout our website. So as Blair mentioned earlier, we have maps of every facility in the Bay Area. You can look in your neighborhood, zoom in on a facility and get its emissions. Mm-hmm. You've got links to its Title V permit, but what Jack is saying is that that information is dispersed, and what we're trying to do is correlate it and bring it into a central area so folks will have easier access to it. In our opinion, the information is there, it's just dispersed, and we need to do a better job, I think, of making folks aware of it. So that young gentleman who came and addressed you yesterday said, your permits for our refinery facilities are not online. That's not true. All of our Title V permits are online. All of the permitting actions are online. The notices for them are online. It's just that I think
they're just... If you can't find it,
if you can't find it, it doesn't exist. And that's the part that we need to get better at.
I agree.
Director Zinks?
Well, one last follow-up on that one, if you don't mind. I completely forgot to mention our public records process, but I understand your point was more along the lines of the self-serve and the ability to just find that information without having to root around too much on a website.
Just to add to that, you know, I know how important this permit renewal system is to make us efficient and be able to conduct our business well. I'd like to simply say, though, that I think you've taken a giant leap forward with the user interface,
well, thank you.
Right, through the presentation talked about the before and after of the consumer's interface to take a look at data. And if I compare it to the EPA site, the AirNow site that I think people have gotten used to using through all the wildfire events, I would say you've one-upped them now. I think you have a beautiful interface. It's very functional. I'm delighted to hear that your system was up through all of the turmoil last year. That really speaks well to what you've done to create a robust back end for this. So I've gone to the archives to go see what air quality has been, and I can do that at the EPA site. I see your map has air quality forecast. Can I go back and look at the archives as well?
Yeah, you could do custom date range.
Okay, so I just have to learn how. It's very intuitive, though. I think you've done a terrific job with it. For folks that are interested in mining data and looking at trends, is there an API available that would let people?
We have not implemented an API as of yet. The idea was to allow people. The idea was to allow people to select date ranges and then pull that down. But yeah, certainly API would be a little more elegant if people wanted to do system-to-system type analysis. So
it's researchers and others, right?
Yeah.
So is it possible, or is it just you get the data in tabular form and then you have to re-enter
Or you download it? So yeah.
You can.
You could download it.
Okay. Well, that's. I think that
it's
does
one
most
step
of it.
Shy of
okay.
API.
A full API. Yeah.
Certainly, the whole API notion is forward in our minds. It seems to be the way everybody would like to receive their data these days.
Sure.
One of the downsides of the API, of course, is if you're not a programmer. So we just felt like it'd be better to make it available to your average citizen.
Having a great intuitive user interface is the first and best thing, I think. So, yeah, I'm glad you have the API in your list. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Can I say something real quick? Whenever we talk about wildfires, we always forget about Blair's team's contribution. You saw the website, the data visualization, how he concentrated on changing that and making sure that it's agile so that people can access it via mobile. So they reacted really quickly to that. And so I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, I owe you lunch.
Director Ju.
Yeah, I just want to echo and say I'm looking forward to kind of the plan for kind of how do we make this more readily available for the public for transparency purposes, because we've heard a lot of comments about that. And I think hearing after we've kind of got our internal stuff in order and we're confident with the data, how do we externalize that to make sure that people know that we aren't hiding anything? And if we want to put things out in a expeditious manner. I did have a question on related to slide 10, it was. So you had an asterisk mm-hmm. saying that there was the budget was estimated mm-hmm. on the current scope, but doesn't include the AB 617 requirements. Could you elaborate a little bit more on what those requirements are and then how they might impact the budget?
Sure. They're not included at the moment because we're still developing them. So it's primarily around criteria toxics, and it's clear that we'll be able to collect additional data, store and report off that data, but we're currently in the process of figuring out exactly what we need to get together in order to meet those requirements.
Got it. So thanks.
Yeah, Director Ju, we're just still trying to figure out what exactly we should be, frankly, putting up there for the public. Mm-hmm. There's been all this great work for us to characterize, you know, the impacts in West Oakland, for example, if you take mm-hmm. a look at all that data. But then the question comes down to, okay, do we, like we normally do, we just throw everything up, and how user-friendly is it going to be? And that's the step we're trying to figure out still.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Marcy, are there any public comments on this?
Jed Holtzman.
Okay. Jed, come on up.
Thank you again, directors. Jed Holtzman, 350 Bay Area. I had comments on slide 4, if you could, Marcy. I just wanted to... this has nothing to do with the great work on the production system, but has to do with the data in this chart, which I think actually highlights a pretty important thing about the Air District. So you have about $35 million of permit revenue represented in this fiscal year. And So international climate goals and kind of the 2017 Clean Air Plan, vision for 2050, and all sorts of other nice things that people adopt will require over time almost entirely eliminating our use of fossil fuels. And that means that fossil fuel permit revenue, fossil fuel related permit revenue, would be expected to kind of decline over time along with the use of fossil fuels, but the Air District will still be needed. At least I think that they will. And so the question is, where will the money come from? And I think that the same way that we're talking about a glide path for industry so that we don't have to kind of pull the rug out in a five-year period in some crazy manifestation, I would say the same thing for you all and Jack's blood pressure and everyone's salary and everything, that we want to kind of figure out where that money can be backfilled from. I also kind of want to highlight, you know, or actually, I guess, maybe examine and ask the question, to what extent does your funding yourself substantially from permits engender the very status quo that the kind of international youth and climate advocates are trying to kind of stem and dismantle? Allison left, but I forgot to mention earlier that September 20th is the global climate strike, and it's the day of the BARC meeting, which ideally would be canceled and everyone would be in the streets with the youth. But you know, I always come before you guys and talk about how the Air District has two hands, one of which is kind of digging the hole deeper, and one of which is kind of helping to get us out of the hole. The digging the hole deeper piece is really the permitting piece, and it sounds like digging the hole deeper in terms of emissions is kind of keeping the lights on here to some substantial effect. And so what other revenue sources can we look at over time to keep this agency functioning at its current capacity or whatever capacity will be needed while we no longer are going to have a pie that looks like this, because we will not be able to take in all this money from refineries when they will not be operating at remotely close to their current levels? It's a question that I think behooves us all to kind of start addressing now over a long time period and gradual time period, as opposed to kind of waiting till it's a crisis or an emergency and then having to take emergent action. Thanks.
Madam Chair, and for Mr. Holtzman's benefit, as you all know, we're in a unique position at the Bay Area. We actually also receive property tax revenue. No other air district, I think, maybe with the exception of one, possibly does, some small one somewhere, gets property tax revenue. We get as much as $25 to $30 million, by the way, which will sustain us into the future, Jed, so as we phase down the fossil fuel industry.
So thanks for that, Jack. Actually, in a perfect world, and hopefully we would be able to anticipate it coming, as the need for the Air District declines, the agency would see that coming and shrink. And in a perfect world, we won't exist anymore, right? But anyway, so I'm not feeling as cynical, and the agency is the nefarious body that Mr. Holtzman sort of characterized it to be. But I think we're any operation, any government agency looks at itself, looks at its mission, and looks at what's changed and adapts to it. Whether it's seen in that revenues looking to increase and the workload increase or decline. So. Anyway, I just want to, Blair, I have one comment, and this is more on going back to the web face, the interface, and all that traffic that happened during the fires last year and the year before. I just think it's an opportunity when you've got folks visiting the site, and they're looking after their own interests. What's the air quality where I'm living today? They are probably have not in the past paid attention, maybe, given how many people were on the site. These are new users, new people thinking about air quality, and how do we use that touch that they're making to, and this is probably a Lisa Fasano sort of question, to direct them to even more information. And this relates to, you know, the refinery question, the refinery emissions as a part of the larger pie. Well, as Jack, you explained, the stationary sources are only part of our emissions problem, and the rest, and the big chunk of it is our own transportation and transportation behavior. So I'm just, how do we take advantage of that landing on the site from someone who isn't always paying attention to air pollution and air quality, to direct them to more information, give them more information that actually speaks to the behavior change and the consumer demand that we really need to see happen to address air quality. So anyway, just a comment there. It was a really excellent presentation.
Thank you.
And I'm going to be up late at night just thinking about it. I don't think I'll be able to go to sleep.
Thank you very much, everybody.
But and your whole team, who is not invisible, they're working behind the scenes, and we appreciate that. So, okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's see. We are on to item 7, which is our 2019 Summer Spare the Air Program and 1920 Winter Spare the Air Campaign updates.
Yes, so Lisa Fasano is going to be giving this presentation. It's just the Summer Spare the Air summary and looking forward to the winter. And I just want to, as a note, want to say that, you know, as we go into November, where we're taking a rule, Reg 6.3, to the board with some provisions that possibly, if you pass them, we'll make it a year-round program. Lisa's going to be agile and change the program to be a year-round program as far as the winter program. And we have that in the works. She's not going to present that really today, but that is to keep in mind. So with that, I'll introduce Lisa Fasano. I'm sure it's not going to be as riveting as Blair, but she...
No, it will be.
But it's guaranteed to be with Lisa, yes.
Good morning, Chair Rice and members of the Executive Committee. So I'm going to give you an overview today of what took place or is still taking place with our Summer Spare the Air campaign. So we created a new campaign this year, and hopefully you've seen it. You've seen it out on buses, and you've seen it on TV. This whole campaign is based on Life is a Trip, Share the Ride, to encourage carpooling. We focused in the messaging very heavily on carpool benefits and how residents, we are all interacting with strangers in every day when we stand in line with them at Starbucks, when we sit next to them in the movie theater, you know, people that we work around, and to let people know that, you know, we're all interacting with people every day. There's no reason we can't just share a ride with them. So that was the focus. So this is our new commercial, and if you haven't had a chance to see it, I'm going to have Marcy play it for you now so you'll be able to hear it.
Everywhere you go, you share life with the people around you. From work to play. From the ballpark to the office. Ever thought about joining a carpool? Not only will you take a few cars off the road, you'll reduce air pollution and enjoy the drive. Think about it next time. Life's a trip. Share the ride and spare the air.
So if you haven't seen that, it's actually been all over TV. I've actually been really excited when I've seen it come up because it's new and it's fresh, and it's just a new encouragement to get people to think about sharing the ride.
Oh. Everywhere.
It's all right. Okay, so here's the highlights of what we've done this year. We've taken our new campaign, we've translated into the 6 languages that we normally translate it into. We have had our advertisements placed throughout the region. We're on buses, we are on billboards, digital billboards, we're on internet website searches, thank you, searches. So you can see the ad most everywhere. We have increased our events this year. We were at 65 events last year. We have been at over 105 events so far this year, out boothing and talking to people about Spare the Air. So that's been the staff has come through, and we've had teams of people going out regularly and interacting with people one-on-one and having the conversation with them really is a good way to get them to focus on rethinking their commute and rethinking how they want to get around. We've also got our Craig the Bike Guy out. He's at 40 events throughout the region, he and his team. So farmers markets, walking streets, things like that, friendly streets where they're shopping. He's out riding around and interacting with people, and people still love to see him. And he's also a good connection to our social media because people take pictures with him and then they repost. Social media is doing great things for us. We have seen our social media followers and interactions climb exponentially. Through our True North surveys, we have learned that in the past years, about 2% of the audience got their news from our social media sites. But this year, that grew to nearly 20% of respondents tell us that they received their Spare the Year news from our social media feeds. So that is great growth as far as our social media interaction with the public goes. The Spare the Year sites become their primary source of Spare the Year news. And so that's where they're going to find things out, not only about transit, but about the fires, about the smoke, and about what they need to do to help us spare the air. So in media relations, we've continued to put out announcements when we have Spare the Air alerts. To date, we've had 12 Spare the Air alerts, but remember, the season isn't over. It's not over until the end of the month. Through that, we've generated more than 80 broadcast and TV stories, as well as online stories. That's grown exponentially, more than 330 online stories. The multiple heat waves that we had in June really propelled, sort of that was the launch of the season and propelled the conversation, and so that helped drive media stories this year. So now I'm going to switch over to the Winter Spare the Air campaign. And as Wayne mentioned, we are going to use the same campaign this year, as the program is still the same, but as of 2020, we will be re-looking at what we're going to do with this campaign to create a more year-round campaign and blend that with our Spare the Air campaign so that there would be advertisements of either coming out throughout the year. So we are, again, using the advertising that we used last year, which focuses more on the indoor air quality and the impacts when you burn wood in your fireplace, how that impacts your indoor air. You'll see these advertisements in multiple languages throughout the region, again, promoting that it's it may be nice to have a burning fire, but it makes it unhealthy to breathe inside your home. We expect that social media will be a strong workhorse for us this year based on what we saw with the Spare the Air season numbers. So we're seeing more interactions. People will be talking about it. We have noticed that more people are commenting that they've got neighbors that are burning. I smell smoke. There's a lot of that that goes on in the winter months. I expect that we will expect that will continue to grow, and there'll be more conversation there. That's good. That also generates media stories because many of the media are tapped into our social sites, and so they're using those to prompt stories as well. We are in the process of putting together our door-to-door campaign for this year. We will be doing door-to-door outreach in these communities, Napa, Menlo Park, San Rafael, and Petaluma. We will be doing door hangers only, not door-to-door outreach, in Lafayette, Vallejo, and two sites in San Jose. There are many cities throughout the Bay Area that don't let us go door-to-door. They won't give us permits for that, so that's where we just do the door hangers. People fill out a quick survey, and if they send it in, they receive a gift card for either Pete's or Safeway. We usually do gift cards for something that's in their area. We don't have the cities set yet, but we have the general locations. We're looking for, again, walkable neighborhoods, neighborhoods that we haven't hit before, and neighborhoods that are older that probably have fireplaces and people still using them. We also use our complaint data to create the map that we're going to use for the door-to-door. So we're looking at places where we see a lot of complaints or a lot of wood burning. And then this is just sort of a summary of the Wood Smoke Reduction Grant Program, which I know there's been some interest in. We've done more than 1,000 changeouts so far since the program began in 2016, totaling more than $2.4 million. We've decommissioned many fireplaces. We've replaced them with natural gas, and we've also replaced systems with electric heat pumps. So currently, there's still 170 projects in progress, and our next step is to, once we get the wood smoke or the wildfire response program and some of the other things coming, we'll return to you with a proposal to update this program and look at potentially putting some more money in it, but launching it in the springtime, because that is when all of the hearth, patio, and fireplace companies and the residents themselves are telling is really the best time for us to change out fireplaces. It's very difficult to get contractors to come in and do the work that needs to be done to either decommission a fireplace or close it out in the fall and winter months, which is often when we issue this, but we expect that we're going to work on several aspects of this program and hope to bring something back to you early next year. And with that, I am happy to take any questions.
Director Hudson.
Yeah, I really like that, Lisa. This just keeps getting better, especially the cigarettes. I think that message tops all others. That'll stop you pretty quick. I noticed here, I'd like the door hangers, if you have any extra. I know somebody that'll walk them. I'll take them. And next year, the one thing I didn't notice that I think is becoming more and more a part of our story about transportation is the bikes, the electric bikes, the bike rentals, if there's some way to fit it in. Because I'm amazed, just even yesterday, I was, for the first time, I've seen more than one or two electric bikes going on BART. I mean, going home yesterday, must have been a half dozen. And they're some pretty neat looking things. But I mean, it's a story that's coming fast.
Yeah. Director Sparing.
You know, these are just great ads, but has there been any consideration to kind of having a byline that says, you know, your air district at work, you know, really connect the public to what we're doing? You know, what happens is, you know, our critics portray us as this government agency that doesn't even interface with the public or, you know, really address a lot of those concerns. And I think a byline that actually connects us to the people we're serving. We're all locally elected officials. We're from local jurisdictions. Right. And I really think it would be good to say your air district mm-hmm. at work or your air, you know, instead of, there was one slide you showed that had something government. You know what I'm saying? Oh, God, that's the worst thing we can say. And
use car.
Yeah. And, but I just really think that we ought to think about connecting us to the people we serve. And,
okay, and so we can certainly take that. It would be small because it gets a little bit noisy with the two logos, the Spirit of the Air logo and the Air District logo, and then your Air District at work. But we could certainly see about adding, including a byline into the next year's campaign.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I really do it because it's not so abstract. You know, it's people saying, yeah, that's my Air District doing great things, and they take pride in that. And we don't seem to make that connection, mm-hmm. and so. I'd just like staff to at least consider it or look at that. But these are great ads. I mean, you're doing a great job there.
Thank you.
Ron? I agree that somehow tying the branding, right, of this thing that is the known, well-appreciated icon and phrase back to the Air District somehow. Maybe it's as simple as at the end of a radio ad saying, you know, Spare the Air brought to you by the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, something like that. Mm-hmm. On occasion, that would. It's hard to get too many icons to fit in, but.
Right.
I do think I think most people don't connect the two.
All right, at least I have a couple questions on the outreach, specifically the even on the social media side. So you're talking about feeling like we're really making some progress there, and then when I add up the social media followers, I get to 22,000, which seems like a huge number, but given the size of the Bay Area, it doesn't seem that huge. But I'm just wondering if we have targets or if there is some metrics that tells you when your penetration is really significant.
Well. So we're as you shared, about 22,000 we've got in all of our total sites. But what we're finding is that people who interact with us online and then share that grows exponentially. I mean, there are people who are listening to the people who have signed in with us and are paying attention to those. So even though we may only have 22,000 followers, we are getting much greater reach than just that. I will tell you that of all the other air districts, they are very envious of the social media interaction that we've got and the number of followers that we have. I mean, there is no other air district that's got the number of followers that we have and then the interactions that follow with that. So although there's 7 million people in the Bay Area, and you could say, well, then why don't we have, you know, more than a million followers? We're actually doing very well, and our interactions with those followers and them passing and sharing that Spare the Air messaging throughout is much larger than just the number of our followers portray.
So you and Blair go to those same cocktail parties and everyone's envious of you?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, okay. And then on the outreach side, on the door-to-door and sort of the hands-on, I don't know how many folks or how many doors you expect to knock on or households to reach with that campaign, but if there is a survey element of it, and that's part education and it's an interactive thing, I'm just wondering, do we utilize anything like Survey Monkeys or even text surveys? You know, you can really reach a lot of people with things like that as well.
We can. We haven't introduced that yet. It's something we talk about, but we haven't done that yet. And part of the reason is we have a lot of good interactions when we knock on doors and we actually talk to people. And we found that we've been able to convert people who are very adamantly, you know, married to their fireplace and are going to use it and don't care what the rule is. But we've been able to turn a lot of people in, and it's really the one-on-one, the personal interaction. We're here from the Air District. It's important for us to share this information with you. It just feels like they're much more responsive when they have a human being in front of them than if we just send out a Survey Monkey or something like that. So it's something we could do if we wanted to track more like our True North surveys. But if we're trying to actually create people to change their behavior, speaking to them one-on-one, we feel, is most effective.
Right, and that's the case for anything that one-on-one. But you can only have so many one-on-one conversations. And I know the Survey Monkeys and doing those sort of text surveys and, you know, getting wherever you get that data from, a voter rolls or what have you, mm-hmm. is actually very inexpensive as well, just a layer on top.
Yep.
So those were my only comments or questions. Any speaker cards? Marcy.
Jed Holtzman.
Jed.
Thank you for the last opportunity, great work in general. I think the Director Sparing's idea has a lot of potential, I was not inferring that the Air District was nefarious at all, just identifying potential structural conflicts, but what I would like to talk about is the Wood Smoke Program. If you could go to slide 11, please. Bark, in the last item, two items ago, was talking about building electrification being a big priority. I know your climate staff, you know, when we met with Abby recently, you know, building electrification is kind of the next area they're kind of looking at trying to incentivize. Everyone's talking about the Berkeley Ordinance, you know, banning in new construction. And 95% of the replacements that you guys have funded with your scant resources have been to natural gas. And that natural gas is likely to last for X years. What number you think that is could vary, but whatever number it is, any kind of infrastructure that you're installing in your house in 2017, 2018, 2019, that is going to be in service for an amount of time that is really not, it kind of exists in a completely other world than a lot of the work of the Air District, a lot of the presentations that you receive, a lot of the meetings we have with your staff, a lot of your plans. And so this is another one of those examples, I think, of kind of digging the hole deeper with one hand and trying to fill in the hole with the other hand. And you guys are literally with your money. And I know we want to change out the dirty, I'm not, you know, we're very supportive of the Wood Smoke Replacement Program, but we really urge you, when you are overhauling this program for the next phase, to greatly, massively change the incentive structure and the way that the funds are allocated to greatly incentivize heat pumps. We've heard the TIO office talk about how there's a problem with consumer education, how there's a problem with contractor education in terms of them just wanting to get you the thing that they know already and can install easily. Please involve the TIO education efforts that are being developed with this program. We have to do something to bend the curve on this. We can't be using Air District money to actually install more natural gas for 30 more years when we're talking about being completely off of fossil fuels in our homes by basically that 30-year period. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Jack?
Well, Jed makes a good point. The natural gas, you know, having the entire world start to move off of natural gas is huge implications for us, because just relatively recently, we were funding, trying to get whole fleets off of their diesel trucks to go to natural gas, right? And so here's another example of where we've been funding to try to go to natural gas, because we're going from extremely dirty to something relatively clean. And so this evolution of moving off of natural gas is something we're going to need to take a step back and, mm-hmm. and come back to you with a bigger conversation, a plan, because it really does touch a lot of the district's programs.
Yeah, and we did, and as I recall, when we were first put this program into place, we had a long discussion, and this is over on the other street, Ellis, where we were all like this, about do you include natural gas as an option or not? And we also, yeah, you know, so and that was part of the conversation. There was some trade-off there, but it was, and we all recognized that the re-up of this program is going to involve that conversation again, and it was foreseen. Director Wagon.
Just to reinforce that, when we first started, natural gas will become an anachronism, or has become an anachronism, but when we were first starting it, we had a lot of the clean fireplace builders coming to us and saying, you got to put us in. And we said, natural gas was a stretch but it was lessening the carbon load, and we're making that stretch.
So, Lisa, thank you very much, and you have a team as well, maybe smaller team, but yeah, for all your work. Great, great program. Those are great ads, and I think, and we all heard Director Sparing's suggestion, and I think agree, might as well try to sell something that, people embrace and love. Use that word air. Clean air is pretty. So, okay, so I think, is that it for this item? Yep. All right, so any other public comment, non-agenda items? See none. Any other committee member comments or business? Director Hudson.
Yeah, hopefully I'll keep this quick. Earlier today we heard where we should reduce greenhouse gases 100%, and I don't think that's what he meant. Reduce the emissions 100% is a worthwhile goal. I don't know if we're there, but we do have a reality check, and that in 2020 we're supposed to reach the 1990 levels. And as we saw on the BARC presentation, it's California that has to reach it. But I know once before I asked for it, and we got a Bay Area, at least an estimate of what our emissions were annual. It would be nice sometime around April when California releases the population to get an idea of where we stand. I mean, we can't tell LA what to do, and, we have ours. The second thing, while I have Jed here, because he likes to come up and talk.
Well, and Director Hudson, on that point, it's kind of related also back to Director Spearing's point about the relative contribution of the mm-hmm. stationary sources. So we're going to follow up with the committee about this information.
Good.
It shows the Bay Area inventories, shows stationary sources, mobile sources, so you get a good sense. So we're going to follow up. Greg has that information. Good.
Thank you. The other thing is, I brought this up, it's the last time I'll bug this group about it. But next year is a special year. We have AMA in San Francisco. We have APTA in October in Anaheim, and the EVS 34 that I told you back up in Portland. And I hope we are considering something where we can send members up to EVS, because you're never going to see these three in such a close proximity again. They also count on a very large walk-up registration. If 350 wants to come up and buy a ticket, they can see what the rest of this country isn't doing, because there is a distinct difference between where we are and where some of these people are going to be in 4 or 5 years. And it's nice to see and refreshing. It doesn't mean we should back off, but it's nice to be starting from here. I wonder how many cities 5 or 10 years from now, Rod, you brought up, that are going to be looking at no natural gas, whereas we're probably going to be looking at the next 4 or 5 months.
Well, it'll obviously take quite a while. But I think in new construction, which we're doing a lot these days, and I wish I was doing more in my city, frankly, you know, the opportunities to not plumb natural gas are huge, I think, in new construction. And that's why so many of our community choice energy agencies are focused on programs to move cities there with this next building code cycle. I just wanted to note that, and I mentioned this, I think, at the board meeting in July, our next stationary source committee meeting is Monday, the 16th of September, and we're meeting in Milpitas City Hall. And the reason we're doing that is to bring some focus and attention to the South Bay odor issues from the various large facilities there. I believe we're also talking about the private school that got built right next to a rockery in Fremont. And so, you know, and for those interested and those of you on the Stationary Source Committee, note that we will not be here. If you come to San Francisco, you will have to then drive to Milpitas. So thank you.
Thank you for that reminder. Okay, so I think that's it for committee comments, committee member comments. So this executive committee will meet next meet on Wednesday, October 16th, here at 9:30 a.m. And with that, I'll adjourn. Thanks, everyone.